Good afternoon. So my name is Dan Schwartzman. I'm a emeritus status at the University of Illinois at Chicago. I retired last year, but nobody actually ever leaves. So I continue to teach at the School of Public Health. I teach an introductory class in management twice a year online. I also teach a class in social ethics on campus twice a year. It's a class in why things suck. And I also run one of our online programs. We have a graduate certificate and an actual MPH on an online basis. Up until my retirement, I was in charge of our MPH program in health policy administration. I'm also the chair of the Health Policy and Management Council of the Association of Schools of Public Health. So I'm going to have a bunch of different hats that I'll be wearing as we go through this. I too don't seem to be able to make a living outside of academia either. I actually do have a law practice, but my law firm doesn't pay me to do this. So I'd like to make a distinction between two parts of the public health workforce. There is the part that most of you belong to, which is the existing workforce of mid-career people. We define this rather broadly as people who have at least 3 years of experience in the field or a relevant advanced degree in the field. And then there is what I refer to somewhat irreverently as the fresh-faced, the 23-year-olds who are coming to graduate school. And they're not part of the workforce yet, but they're going to be our future. They are idealistic. Don't really understand much about public health, and they have very little in the way of job skills. The first question I ask in my management class is, what is the worst quality of the worst manager you ever had, and what is the best quality of the best manager you ever had? And half my class has never had a manager. So go try and teach management to people who have never had a job. They need to know a lot. You know, they need to have some sense of the overall landscape of public health. They need to be able to have an approach to thinking about public health problems that's different from anything that they've done up till now. We have to give them some tools, but we also have to educate them on how to integrate, since public health is inherently an integrated activity. We don't know much about where they're going. There isn't any follow-up of this cohort that I'm aware of. And we don't have much idea of how they're doing once they leave us. And that's something that we're in the process of now deciding we're going to have to look at. As chair of the Health Policy and Management Council of the Schools of Public Health, this last year we did a questionnaire amongst our member programs around the country, 65 programs in policy and management in public health. We have preliminary results. We only have 28 responses yet, which is a 40% response rate. That's not too bad, but we're hoping to get it up a bit. But what's clear is that this trend that I'm going to report on is happening around the country. In the past, our mid-career people were nurses. They used to make up 20% of our student body. They now make up less than 5% of our student body. It's quite often the case I will ask, is anybody here a nurse? And, well, not yet. No, I don't mean here. I mean in my classes. And get the dismaying response of nobody. That's a real change. I've been teaching public health for almost 34 years, and that's a huge change. We certainly got plenty of doctors. We still get a fair number of doctors coming through our program. We used to get these things called health planners. When I got my MPH in 1978, everybody was going to be a health planner. Now nobody even knows what it means. We do get a fair number of other professionals who are finding their way into public health, dentists, PTs and OTs, and chiropractors. We have a DVM MPH program. So there are some mid-career people, but it's really, unfortunately, not a large part of our current student body. So the question is, what are we going to do about that? I mean, how are we going to address the educational needs of mid-career people when they aren't showing up in our class? When I was admitted to the School of Public Health in 1977, I was a practicing attorney with 3 years of experience as a public health advocate. And they weren't sure that I had enough background to get an MPH. Things have changed. This is just an estimate on my part. Unfortunately, we don't keep very good data on this. But I do know that when back a little after I started, the median age in our classes was 32. I know this because I was 29 and was somewhat intimidated by the fact that there are people who had way more experience than I did. And as my hair has gotten gray, my classes have gotten younger. And I don't mean that figuratively, but literally. And today, the median age is somewhere in the mid-20s. And the number of people who are mid-career in our classes is at 25% at most. This makes for a significant change in how we teach. And we're undergoing that process. But it also raises the question, what do we do about those people who are no longer showing up in our classes? We don't quite know why this happened. The CEEF, the Council on Education and Public Health, required that public health programs be a minimum of 42 hours. It used to be a minimum of 34 hours. When that happened about the same time that we saw this decline start. I ask the question is whether or not this is actually only happening at UIC, but now I have data that show that it's actually happening around the country. Maybe all of us have exhausted our geographic markets, you know, where we've taught all those people who are going to come get an MPH in our geographic market. Possibly economics. I think there's a real possibility that the practice community is just kind of fed up with schools of public health. I hear that a lot. And so it may be that people are just not wanting to come and hear us anymore. We have an affirmative action program at our school for mid-career people. You can get into our program with lower credentials if you have experience, because we want these people in our classes. We're working with alumni and employers to try and change, go through curricular revisions. Within my department, we have separated out the researchers from the teachers, which is not usual practice. The mean person teaching health policy and management around the country at schools of public health is a health services researcher. And their interest is in getting grants to do health services research. And they teach the MPH because they have to. And what we did was we separated out the health services researchers from the teachers, and I'm over with the teachers. And that has worked somewhat. But our biggest thing is online programming. We decided that the only way to do this was to actually reach out through the internet and reach people where they live and where they work. I see a trend over the years in messages that we're getting from the practice community, we being academics. The whole notion of setting up these practice centers, which we have people here from, I think in part was a sense by the federal government and by leaders in public health and a few academics that we were not doing a very good job of meeting the practice community's needs. Unfortunately, what happened was all those practice centers were set up as a separate entity at their School of Public Health. And so you have the people over here who are doing the research and don't particularly know much about the field, and over here are the practice people who don't have much interaction with those academics over here. And so I don't think that worked in integrating practice in the day-to-day teaching at schools of public health. The whole focus on competencies is an attempt to get public health academics to be clear about what it is they're turning out and to be clear about the competencies that their people need when they're on the job. Unfortunately, in my opinion, we have drastically over-relied upon competencies. We've decided that competencies are not just necessary but sufficient in curricular design. I gave a talk here last year on that. If you're interested, I'll be happy to send you the slides from that. I don't have the time to go into that now. Besides, this is only so much swimming upstream I'm willing to do. What people are going to have to do, I think, is set up advisory committees to get input from alumni and from potential employers ahead of time in curricular design. What is it that your people need to know? What is it that we're doing right? What is it that we're doing wrong? And all of that has to be used in both planning and ultimately in evaluation of curriculum. So these are our five teachers. Me, that's the first one. A couple of people with just MPHs, no doctoral degrees. That was a big policy hurdle to overcome in academia. It happens that those two MPH people have 70 years of experience in the field. And are terrific when it comes to talking about what teaching people what they're really going to need to know. We just hired the person who was the policy person for the Chicago Department of Public Health. She happens to have an MSW. And then we have another attorney on staff who has spent years lobbying for not-for-profits. In addition to that, we have PhDs. We have another JD-MPH. All of whom teach various kinds of courses for the health policy and administration program in our school. But you can see there's a fair amount of years of experience in the field, not as researchers. We offer two complete MPH programs, one in informatics, one in policy and management. That you have to be mid-career to get into our policy and management MPH. It is our effort to reach out, back out to that community we no longer see. We also offer a variety of graduate certificates where you need a bachelor's degree and that's about it, and a personal statement so we understand that you are a fit to that program. At the school, in addition to health policy and administration, which is my division, our Division of Community Health Sciences has two MPH programs, one of which is for mid-career, one of which is for people just starting out. There are also four other certificates offered at our school. So we've made a very significant commitment to online education. In HPA, Health Policy Administration, we have about 75 online students, almost all of whom are mid-career. The ones who are not are the certificate students. The ones who are not mid-career in the MPH program are in our comprehensive public health informatics program, which will take in people right out of college. So you get an idea that we're talking about hundreds of people. Next year, our online students will outnumber our on-campus students. We're the largest division at the School of Public Health, and that's in part because we've more than doubled ourselves in doing online education. Online graduate education is our way of reaching mid-career people who we lost. If you do it right, there's actually more student interaction, student-teacher interaction, and student-student interaction. If you do it wrong, there's none. Ask yourself a question. How many of you would come to this room today at this time if you knew that what you were going to watch was a PowerPoint presentation and a coordinated recorded message? You wouldn't be here. Why do we expect people to be online for that same incredibly boring experience? And so you need to build in interaction. If there isn't interaction between the faculty member and the student, you aren't teaching. You're just exhibiting. And what my students say is that they get to know the other students better in my online classes than they do in my on-campus classes. And why is that? Because think about your own experience on on-campus classes. There's usually about a third of the people who do all the talking. And then there's two-thirds of the people who learn by just sitting and listening. And we make people interact. We make people to participate. There are no free riders in our online programs. And so they actually interact way more than they would have otherwise. We work for students to work together on group projects, and we set up part of the learning management system enables them to do that. And we're trying to learn more. I said at a meeting yesterday that those of us involved in online education are just too old. There aren't enough 25-year-olds leading online education. So the whole idea of new media is just completely foreign to anybody with my color hair. And so we're trying to learn by talking to the students primarily about what we should be doing in terms of new media. You know, online education is easy to do badly. If you want to do online education, you have to accept the idea that it's going to take about 150% of the time to put an online class up and about 125% of what it would take to do an on-campus course, but 125% to teach it. It's way more work to do online education. And for the student body as a whole, it's more work. Because there's nobody who can just show up and sit in a room for 3 hours and go home. They all have to work. And so as a student body, it's a great deal more work. This is not an approach that works for all teachers. I love doing on-campus programs. I love the ego kick of standing up in front of people, well, like this. I like this. But it turns out I really like interacting back and forth. I didn't realize that until I realized, you know, when my kids were young, they used to ask questions like, why is the sky blue? And how do airplanes fly? And I loved answering those questions, and I did it in a way that I taught them a little bit about physics, a little bit about molecules, a little bit about light, until they got old enough that they never asked me any questions anymore and just got tired of listening to me. And that's how you can do online education. That's one way that we've figured out how to do online education, is that kind of one-on-one teaching, but in front of everybody. So I may have 20 people in my cohort, and I do one-on-one teaching, but everybody, the other 19, are going to get their turn on one-on-one teaching, and they're all going to read the back and forth that we do with everybody. So I already said that we now have some preliminary results. We'll have more results fairly soon. About a quarter of the programs that have responded so far are doing online teaching, and we'll know more as we go. I think I'm going to abbreviate things. Okay, so what does this say? Academia, because the point of this was to provide a variety of different perspectives. Academia is not an easy place to teach. Graduate academia is even a harder place to teach. And for a while, people showed up, the workforce showed up, and now we're going to have to go out and go after them. And we have to do it with an experience that will be one that they talk about with their colleagues and that they provide good word of mouth and that actually feels like they're going to be able to do their work better. And that's what we all, I think, have to figure out how to commit ourselves to. Thank you. Thank you.